You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
This is the DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg podcast.
I'm a big star, you know.
Listen live weekday mornings from 5 to 8 a.m. on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
Hey, Alexa, play ESPN New York 98.7.
The Olympia.
Shaqik into the zone. He's kind of off track. He's in. He shoots. DiPietro!
The Super Bowl champion.
Manning goes down. Chris Canty off the edge. The right defensive end made the play.
And the greatest pound-for-pound sports talk show host in all the land.
That's Lawrence Taylor! That's Lawrence Taylor!
DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg starts right now.
And a good Wednesday, January the 20th, DCR with you right here on 98.7 ESPN. Lot to get into today. Championship weekend, Patrick Mahomes, will he or will he not play? Sounds like he's leaning in the direction of absolutely playing. We've got the Kyrie Irving story, and as we did yesterday, we start with the Mets, both on the Jared Porter situation and on George Springer going to Toronto. But let's go around and say good morning. I'm not a fan of the Wednesday, by the way. But we say good morning to Chris Canty. Good morning, Chris. How are you?
Good morning, Dave. Good morning, Rick. Dave, I'm trying to figure out, why aren't you a fan of Hump Day?
I can't figure out what kind of day. Like, are we beginning of the week? Are we end of the week? Like, it doesn't have a feel, the Wednesday, to me. I'd like more of a feel to the Wednesday.
Well, it's all downhill from here.
So yeah, the Thursday I love.
Thursday. Yeah, it's like weekend's eve almost with Thursday, right?
Thursday I love.
Yeah.
Wednesday just kind of feels like I'm in no man's land. Rick, you appreciate the Wednesday or no?
I like the Wednesday.
You like the Wednesday?
No, I mean, it's a hump day. You know, I'm known as Humpty. And then this is why you don't like it, because it's not about Dave Rothenberg.
What day happens, do you think that's Rothenberg?
If it was Roth Day instead of Hump Day, you'd be like, oh, this is my favorite day of the week. I love today. We'd love Rothenberg. It'd be the greatest day ever.
So you feel like this is named after you, so you feel kind of an association to the Wednesday, to the hump day?
I love the Wednesday. Love it.
So it's your favorite day of the week?
Especially the Wednesday, like late afternoon, night, when I know Thursday's right around the corner, only a couple days left. It's been a good first month of shows, I'll tell you that, though.
It's only week three.
I was with you when I played in the NFL, because Wednesday was the hard practice. So I hated Wednesdays when I was playing. That's when you got all the hitting out of the way for the week. Hated Wednesday.
Yep. Yeah. Thursday, good day. Friday, great day. You wake up Friday morning, you feel like $1 million because you know that you're almost done with it. You got it done the week.
Oh, yeah.
Yep. All right. So yesterday, obviously, Jared Porter, as we were ending the show, and we talked about this during the show. I said he's not going to make it till today. He didn't make it till the end of our show yesterday at like 7:58, 7:59. Jared Porter relieved of his duties. I commend the Mets. I think they did the right thing. They acted very quickly. From the story being broken, Rick, to him being fired was like 10 hours all in. You have to commend the Mets on acting swiftly there yesterday.
They did exactly what needed to be done. And, you know, listening to Sandy yesterday, he was made aware of the report by Jared Porter, didn't get a chance to read it the night before. So he releases his statement, read it that night, had a meeting with Steve Cohen at 7:30, and they decided that the only course of action was going to be to fire Jared Porter. I mean, there's no ties to Jared Porter. Jared Porter, I mean, he firing him was their only option for a couple different reasons. The first being Steve Cohen, when he bought the team, talked about, you know, how this franchise was going to be based around integrity. And then Sandy Alderson talking about how, you know, the only way we change the perception of this team is by changing the reality and creating a new kind of culture. And I thought what was great yesterday, too, he's like, I had a meeting, you know, set up with our 400 employees, and we had to cancel it because how am I going to, like, if we don't make this decision, you know, how do I stand in front of a room of 400 employees and talk about this new culture and integrity when, you know, we need to be the first ones to prove to everyone in this organization, to our fan base, that, you know, this is what we're all about and this is unacceptable. And that's exactly what they did yesterday.
I love the fact that the decision came from the owner on social media. I love that. Like, Steve Cohen was like, let me get out in front of this. I want to make sure that I send a clear message about what the Mets are going to be about in terms of our standards, in terms of our values, to our fan base, to the media, and everybody around the baseball world. And the fact that he came out and he did it before the start of business on Tuesday morning, that was impressive. Like, we were talking about it and we were saying, you know, if he did it, you know, around noon, that would probably be the expectation. But the fact that it came before 8 a.m., that just shows you how important it is to him to make sure that everybody knows it's a new day with the Mets, and we have a zero-tolerance policy when it comes to behavior of this nature. And I thought it was also important, Rico, that Sandy Alderson did have that Zoom call and that he made sure to outline the expectations for all club employees moving forward. That way everybody understands how we're going to handle these types of situations. I think that Major League Baseball has got to follow up on the Mets' actions that started yesterday, because there's a bigger issue at hand with dealing with inclusivity, especially when it comes to women around the sport of baseball. Like, the fact that something like this could take place and that there was no discipline to Jared Porter before this, not by the Cubs, not by the Diamondbacks, and he was able to ascend through the ranks in professional baseball, there's a real problem with that. That's got to be addressed.
Well, I understand, too. Listen, most people, when we talk about culture and everything else, and that's, I mean, that's one of those, you know, cliche buzzwords that we always talk about. But, you know, having been in the locker room, you know, Chris winning a championship, you realize how important that is. And, you know, people think it's the players, it's the coaching staff. It really starts from the top with ownership. I think a perfect example of that right now is going on in Houston with the Texans. I mean, it really does start from the top of the organization. And Steve Cohen has a perfect opportunity just buying the team, new regime,
right,
to set the tone. And this is, I mean, this is something that you don't want to deal with, because everything for Mets fans and Steve Cohen has been great. But when faced with, you know, the first sign of adversity, he made the absolute right decision. And why let it linger, man?
And swiftly.
Why let it go longer than it? Why let that story, the negative story, go on longer than it needs to go on? If you sat down with Sandy and you said, "This is there's no two ways around it. This is unacceptable.
Well,
this is not what we stand for. Let's fire him now." So the story for the rest of the day is about how the Mets acted swiftly and made the right decision, as opposed to, you know, the Mets are sitting on the what do you think the conversation would have been yesterday if they hadn't made an early decision? What are they waiting for?
They would have gotten scrutinized.
Yeah.
And rightfully so. I mean, there was, and we talked about this. I mean, there was no, I mean, how many times did the three of us just 100% agree on a story? And it was, and everyone, every call we took, everyone we spoke to, every Buster Olney, I mean, Mike Tenenbaum, everyone was in agreement that this is what you had to do. This is, they had no choice. This is what they had to do. And they did it. And what I like about it is they did it quickly. I mean, you could have gone, if you went to bed at 9:45 and slept for a long time and woke up at 8:05 yesterday morning, you went from this happened to he's done. This was quick. You know, they came out with a quick statement on Tuesday night, and by the time he got going on Wednesday morning, he was relieved of his duties. I don't think you can ask for anything more from the Mets. I thought they handled it well.
No, I think they handled it well, Dave. And to your point, I think they were able to move so quickly because it was really an open and shut type of situation. Like, there is no two sides about what Jared Porter did. It was sexual harassment. It was unsolicited. She didn't ask for this. She didn't deserve this. There was nothing that she did, no type of behaviors that would have led to being able to justify Jared Porter's actions. So I think it was absolutely appropriate for Steve Cohen and Sandy Alderson to huddle up two nights ago and make the decision to fire him early on Tuesday morning. Like to me, there was ample evidence, and really from Jared Porter's admission, that would allow the organization to move on from him. And I love the fact that they fired him with cause, so now they don't have to eat the contract. But more importantly, executives around baseball know that teams aren't going to tolerate this, especially the Mets. Like, I think that's an important message to send. And in the fact that it was Steve Cohen doing it and not a PR team, not a press release from the organization, but the actual owner's own words on Twitter, loved it. Love everything about it.
I agree. We all feel good about the way the Mets handled it. One thing I didn't like, we'll get into that in a second. Jeff Passan was on the K Show yesterday. How do you think the Mets handled this situation?
I think there were some people calling for the immediate firing of him last night after our story ran. I personally look at an organization as big as the Mets and a job as big as general manager as not needing a snap decision in the moment. I can understand why Steve Cohen and Sandy Alderson needed a night to think about it, but the fact, guys, that it was done before 8 o'clock this morning, I think tells you everything you need to know.
Yeah, and we're in agreement on that. Now, the one thing I did not like, and it really does bother me, is that ESPN made a concerted effort to not say where she was from. And Sandy came out in his press conference yesterday and said exactly where she was from. So I do have an issue with that. I don't think it was handled well, and I think he should have known better. And I think he should have respected her privacy more than, in fact, he did.
That was the only mistake he made.
And that was a bad mistake, though, Rick.
No, it was a bad mistake. I agree with you 100%. And I don't think, I mean, I would imagine he didn't mean to do that. And then he was also talking about the video that, you know, I was actually, I'm listening to the K show in the interview, and he kept saying video, and I texted K. I was like, what video is he talking about? Did we not see a video? And then finally he answered the question. He meant the passing video, but, no, I mean, listen, for all those people that want to criticize the Mets for not making the decision that night, you still have to, I mean, collect all the facts. You still have to figure out, I mean, we had a call yesterday, bring up the lawyer aspect of this. I'm sure that was involved too. Like, can we, is this grounds to terminate his contract with cause so we don't have to pay him? Yep. I mean, this is absolutely, you know, with cause. Let's get that in order. And then they had a meeting at 7:30 in the morning. And listen, I'll take full blame. I'll hold the L on this one because I didn't really know what the protocol was going from our show to the next show. Mm-hmm. Like, if I get in trouble if we went too long. So as we were going to Rule 76, it was whispered in my ear by RJ and Santi that he was fired. But I was already in the process of Rule 76, and I don't want to get in trouble for going into the other show, so I didn't say it, but I should have. I regret not saying it, but it happened, like, right at the end of the show.
Yeah.
Right as we were done. Like, the second we were done, Santi's like, by the way, he's gone. I was like, oh, God.
Yeah. But, Dave, to the point that you raised about Sandy letting everyone know the country that the reporter was from, I didn't think that was malicious. I just think that was a misstep by him. And I'm sure he's gone round and round and talked about this in the hours since the story had broke. But I was a little bit confused about one thing that Sandy said yesterday. He said he didn't want to suggest that Jared Porter wasn't forthcoming, but he didn't know the full breadth of the situation. It wasn't apparent to them until the article was released. I would want to know more about, okay, what exactly did you know about this situation before you hired Jared Porter?
I don't think he knew it. I didn't think he knew anything. Jared Porter was the one who called him once the story. Once ESPN got a hold of Jared Porter and told him the story was going to run, that's when Jared Porter called Sandy and told him. And I think what Sandy was insinuating is, and another reason why I think Jared Porter should have been fired, and why, I mean, he clearly has a problem, is I would imagine the way that Jared Porter described it, in his mind, wasn't as big a deal to Jared Porter. And then when Sandy read the story, he's like, I don't, this guy's crazy. This guy's out of his mind. This is way worse than how he described it.
And that's exactly what I thought. But moving forward, why not say that Jared Porter was not fully truthful with everything that had gone on? When he had contacted us to make us aware about this situation, he didn't tell us exactly what happened. Why are you trying to protect Jared Porter at this point?
I don't know if he was trying to protect Jared Porter.
Or even cushion it even a little bit, because that's what it feels like when I heard it yesterday. I was like, this doesn't make sense. Either they knew something about it, or if they didn't, they're trying to cushion some of the backlash on Jared Porter. And to me, in this moment, he deserves everything that he's getting.
I don't disagree with you. I just think in the moment, Sandy was just shooting straight with what Jared Porter told him. I don't think he was trying to cushion the fall, although he did mention the fact that, you know, this was, you know, how devastating this was to Jared Porter's, you know, baseball career moving forward.
His career is over.
Which, I mean, I don't think anyone is worried about at the moment. But
no.
I mean, I would imagine what Sandy meant was the way that Jared Porter described it, which I think kind of gives you some insight into, you know, why Jared Porter would think it was okay to send somebody, you know, 62 unanswered text messages and then, you know, fire off, you know, a nude picture of himself. Like, he must just not think in his mind that it's that big of a deal.
Which is amazing to me. Well, and it kind of shows you guys that this is, you know, for lack of a better term, a sick, twisted guy. If you can send 62 photos and culminate in sending naked pictures of yourself and then stock photos that somehow you have just sitting on your phone, you have real issues. You have real, real deep-seated problems.
yeah, you got a problem. And, I mean, this problem, and hopefully he gets it taken care of. I mean, cost him his job and maybe his career.
Maybe so.
I mean, but Dave, let's be honest. I mean, it also caused this poor woman, this reporter, her career as well.
Oh, she's the victim here. He's not
having to deal
victim.
With the situation. No, not at
Absolutely
all.
Absolutely not. The only thing is there's a face and a name that you can put on him, and it's tangible. With her, it's just she's some right now random woman that we really don't know all that much about. So you feel like you at least know him. You don't know anything about her, but she's absolutely 100%. She is 100% the victim in this story.
Thanks for listening to the DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg podcast.
You're absolutely right.
Catch the show on demand wherever and whenever you want. Just subscribe to us, rate us, and review us wherever you get your podcasts.
6:30, early, we moved him up. Dan Graziano is going to join the show, break down the big NFL weekend. 6:45, a little CMT. We didn't do it yesterday because it just didn't feel appropriate, but 6:45 CMT. We'll hear at some point. I'm not going to promise at any point because I don't know when we'll get to it, but we'll hear that new open that the listener made for us, which is very enjoyable. And there might have been gas passed on the show yesterday as well. We'll take a listen to the audio from that. You think there might have been, right, Rick?
Yeah, Fartgate. Fartgate 2021.
Yeah, it did kind of
sound like gas to me. And the response afterwards sounded like, listen, someone that was guilty, but again, I mean, this is, we'll get to the bottom of it.
We certainly will. Now, Hinky Haynes was a good listener to the show, but I have to correct him for this. He says, how about passing knowing the story since 2017 and endorsing the hire back in December? I don't know if you guys heard Passon on the K-Show yesterday. But
he was fired up. He came in hot on the K-Show yesterday.
He was angry. He literally was angry. Firstly, he wasn't with ESPN in 2017, and he said he did not know about this story in December when Porter was hired. He said he never would have tweeted out, you know, what a good hire this was. He just wouldn't have done it. And how can you not believe him? I believe him, and I don't think he found out about this story until afterwards. So everyone that wants to say ESPN sat on the story, and they asked Mina as well yesterday, why did he not come out with the story? And she said that the woman didn't want the story to be public until finally Porter got to the point where he was a GM of a team, and she was now out of baseball. And she said, all right, it's finally time to go with it. So stop blaming ESPN and stop blaming Jeff Passon here.
Well, first of all, it's the woman reporter's story to tell. And it was Mina Kimes that kept in touch with the woman. And then Jeff Passon is now, I mean, he's our baseball Woj.
So he gets put on the story last
minute. He gets put on the story
to kind of get involved, yes.
Exactly right. Listen, I mean, this just, and I said it yesterday, and it still bothers me today, is how something like this was allowed to be swept under the rug, because it was swept under the rug at some point. It had to have been. If there's a Cub employee that knew back then that this had gone on, and I mean, he gets vetted to be hired as the assistant GM in Arizona. This never comes up.
Mm-hmm.
Then he's a finalist for the Angels job. Never comes up. And it wasn't, we're not giving you the job. Like, the Angels didn't say, we're not giving you a job because of, you know, prior transgressions. No, that wasn't the case at all. And then he gets the Mets job. And then the story breaks. So, no, I mean, it seems like outside of a handful of people that just
three
kept their
is what Passon said. He said the woman reporter, the victim, Porter, and this intermediary who worked with the Cubs.
Yeah, and that's the part that I don't understand, Dave. Like, if there was a Cubs employee other than Jared Porter that knew about it, I feel like that individual had a responsibility to report that to the front office, to the human resources department, someone. There should have been some kind of formal report or complaint filed against Jared Porter. I just don't believe that the Cubs, or the Diamondbacks for that matter, get to bury their head in the sand and watch all of this stuff blow over. I just don't think that that's fair, and that's why I think Rob Manfred has to launch an investigation to dive deeper into how something like this could happen, which leads a reporter to feel uncomfortable so much to the point where she has to leave the industry and leave the country and go back to her home country. To me, that's embarrassing for Major League Baseball, and more has to be done to find out exactly who knew what, so there can be some accountability throughout all of this.
I don't understand how you have a situation where your director of professional scouting could be sued. I mean, the story could have broke. Like, she could have exposed him. You bring in an employee to kind of be the middleman in the situation. The middleman's not reporting back to his boss. Okay, here's the situation. This is what's going on.
Right.
Like, it doesn't seem like at the moment she's going to go forward with the story. He's just gonna keep that in his pocket.
That's what he did.
Well, he's trying to bury it. Yeah, I mean, we're trying to. You know, this is damage control at this point. Like, they have no interest in actually trying to hold Jared Porter accountable. This is just, okay, I want to act like a go-between, just so it feels like we actually care about how she feels, so she doesn't complain or she doesn't blow a whistle.
Yeah, but my point is, the go-between is going to report what he's doing to the boss. Like, hey, here's where we're at with the situation. You know, as far as she's telling me, she's not going to go forward. So it seems like, you know, for the time being, this isn't something that we're going to have to deal with. I mean, aren't you reporting back to the person in charge of the organization to let
maybe,
them know?
Maybe not. Because, I mean, there's plausible deniability. Like, I can say I didn't know. And that's why he doesn't ask what's going on or ask more about the situation. Like, I could absolutely see a higher up saying, I don't know and I don't want to know. So whatever you know, keep it to yourself.
Yeah, bury your head in the sand.
And try to minimize the damage to this thing or the blowback on the Cubs organization, especially being in the middle of a championship run. Like, I could absolutely see them trying to just bury this and let it die on the vine and not let it go any further than those three individuals.
Let's go to Ronnie in Harlem. Ronnie, you're next up on 98.7 ESPN.
Hey, guys.
What's up, Ronnie?
It's actually Lonnie. I guess RJ didn't hear me.
Yeah, he has that hearing issue. Left hearing
I like both. Okay. Lonnie, I like both. I mean, Ronnie sounds nice, too.
Well, yeah, actually, and it's okay, RJ. I love you guys.
Can we call you Ronnie, or do you insist on
no,
Lonnie?
No. Lonnie is my name. Don't call me Ronnie.
So you prefer Lonnie. All right. Seems somewhat selfish to me, but we'll go with Lonnie. That's fine.
I just wanted to say you guys are like Folgers. You're the best part of waking up in the morning. And my question was, basically, if this, and I called the Michael K show and I asked to the guys yesterday too, is if this happened in 2016 or 2017 and it's now 2021, how is it possible, which you guys are basically breaking down now, but how is it possible that he was able to go to three different organizations if this thing was known? I understand the story wasn't broke completely, but if somebody knew in the Cubs organization, I believe that person didn't need to bury it. But if this man is trying to move on to different organizations, that's something that should be told to at least the owner of the organization. Like, hey, this guy, da-da-da-da-da, like something happened with here. Because at the end of the day, this is going to come back up. And something like this shouldn't happen. So I feel like they should have nipped this in the butt a long time ago. As soon as it was told, it should have been handled. I just want to know what you guys feel about that. Thank you.
Yeah, I mean, to Lonnie's point, that's the one thing I still don't really understand. Like, I mean, at the time of when this happened, I mean, he's the director of professional scouting. I mean, if this is something that you heard.
And on the rise in Major League Baseball, too.
Yeah, but I mean, on the rise, but still, I mean, if you're the Cubs, I mean, and you heard any kind of rumors or something like this happening, I mean, how big of a loss is Jared Porter if you do the right thing? Like, are you gonna? It's just the Cubs are going to fall apart if you do the right thing and get rid of Jared Porter?
No, but it, like you said yesterday, man, it's a good old boys club. They try to protect one another. And I think it speaks
to a bigger problem, that this is probably something that a lot of people, I mean, Jared Porter wasn't the only one doing stuff like this.
Well, I think that's obvious. I think it's obvious. Just in the way that this whole situation was handled, which is why I said before, Rob Manfred has got to get involved and find out exactly the extent that this is happening around Major League Baseball. Like, I mean, the fact that this is handled so cavalier, I don't understand how that's possible. Here it is, you have a director of scouting that is sexually harassing a reporter in the workplace because he's talking about meeting up with her on road trips and all that other kind of stuff. You have that actively happening while you're trying to win a World Series. Like, to me, like, just... There is a line here that has been crossed from a professional standpoint, and the Cubs and Jared Porter absolutely feel like they're liable in this situation. And I don't understand why there isn't more being done in terms of trying to make sure that you create safe spaces for these women to work in your sport.
Well, maybe they will moving forward. Maybe that's the result of this in Major League Baseball.
Thanks for listening to the DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg podcast.
I don't wake up at 4 a.m. to wear a swim shirt.
Looking for more access to the show? Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at DCR on ESPN.
Yesterday, I found out that George Springer was going to sign with Toronto, and that picked up momentum quickly, and that deal now got done. Was it 6 years, $150 million? And I almost didn't feel badly about it. I almost, and correct me if you think I'm wrong, and maybe you do, like I almost would have felt weird about signing him yesterday, the day you fire your GM for harassing a female reporter. So I don't know. I don't think I felt as badly missing out on Springer as I would have normally because of the circumstances.
I mean, it was a roller coaster of emotions, right? I mean, the fact that story broke and, you know, he was fired, and then, you know, later last night you find out that George Springer, the guy, I mean, I think we all wanted the Mets to sign. I mean, you feel weird that it if it would have happened, but I mean, it would have also been a good way to kind of, you know, get past the whole GM debacle by signing George Springer. I mean, the only thing that makes me feel better about not getting George Springer is that he ended up in the AL East.
Really? Yeah, you want to be that guy today? Really?
Love the fact.
That's
love
what we're
the
doing?
Fact he's on Toronto.
Enjoy
love
him.
It.
That's why you're a bad guy, man. You're a bad guy.
Get a little Michael Brantley action in that lineup, too. Ooh,
Yeah, that's going to be a pretty good team. They're an up-and-coming team. I mean, they got a really young core of players that they like, and just thinking about all the options that they have in that outfield, that's going to be a team that's going to have to be reckoned with in the years to come. And adding George Springer just brings that leadership quality and that postseason experience to a relatively young club. So I like the move for the Blue Jays. But as far as the Mets are concerned, they weren't willing to go to a certain level. I mean, they decided that they were going to, you know, value him at $20 million a year for six seasons, and the Blue Jays gave him 30. I mean, you can't blame George Springer for making that decision, but you also trust with Sandy Alderson and Steve Cohen are trying to build, because you like the fact that they were aggressive and they went out and made the deal for Francisco Lindor, who's a guy that you're going to have to pay $300 million to at some point in the next year or so.
Which you know is going to get done. And I agree with you. And here's the difference for me, Rick. It's that in the past, you'd miss out on a high-profile free agent that you thought you had a chance at, and you'd think to yourself, all right, well, that's it. All our hopes and dreams are gone. I don't feel like that at all. Like, I feel like they'll probably bolster the bullpen, maybe add another starter, and certainly add someone like Jackie Bradley in center field. So normally, years pass, and I'm like, oh, God, here we go again. I don't feel like that right now, though.
Well, you cannot feel like that. I mean, but you still only got one of you know, the intended superstars that you set up to get this
so far.
Well, so what do you mean so far? You didn't. I mean, you're not going to. It doesn't sound like you're going to get Bauer.
You're not
going to
get Bauer.
Okay, and you chose McCann instead of Real Muto. I mean, he wasn't the best catcher available.
So if I give you another good arm in the bullpen and Jackie Bradley Jr., you don't feel like this is a home run of an offseason, though?
No, it was a great offseason. I mean, it could have been better. I mean, Springer was asking $175. He's a Connecticut kid. Do you think he wants to go spend his time playing baseball in Dunedin, Florida? I'm going through my did it happen in Florida's. Quite a few of them happened in Dunedin. I mean, $25 million for George Springer to stick in center field? You're trying to win a World Series, aren't you?
Yeah, that's the plan within 5 years.
How good is, he's a World Series MVP.
Listen, I would have loved to have him too. I mean, it would have been great. We would have been waxing poetic on you bring in two legitimate superstars. But my point is, I don't think it's the end of the world right now by not signing him. I would have liked him. I would have loved him. I think every Mets fan would have.
I'm not saying it's the end of the world. It bothers me a little bit that, I mean, it seems like it was a money issue. And with Steve Cohen, it's not supposed to be a money issue. George Springer is a much better option for what you need than Jackie Bradley. Bradley's great defensively. Offensively, he stinks, and he's a left-handed bat. You don't need another left-handed bat. You needed a right-handed bat. That's why George Springer fit. And I'm sure he wanted to be a Met instead of a Toronto Blue Jay. They don't even know where they're playing yet, Toronto. Could be Toronto. Could be Dunedin. They don't even know.
Yeah, but I don't have a problem with the Mets not committing to a guy that's on the wrong side of $30 million a year annually.
It's 25. It's he got $25 million a year. It's not 30. It's 25.
$150, right? That's what he got?
$150.
Yeah.
$25 million. He initially asked for $175. The market is soft. That's why I felt like this was the time to do it. The market is soft. Free agents next year, outfield, aren't great. So unless you're telling me now that Steve Cohen and Sandy Alderson love Michael Conforto, and I think you guys know how I feel about Michael Conforto, and they're going to give him a long-term deal, so you'll have him on a long-term deal.
You will.
Lindor on a long-term deal.
You will.
fingers crossed, hopefully Noah Syndergaard comes back and proves that he's worthy of a long-term deal, then yeah, I'll feel better about it. If we sign Brad Hand, absolutely I'll feel better about it. But the fact is that George Springer was the best of both worlds. It's an upgrade defensively in center field. It's a right-handed bat you need.
Yeah, it's a power bat.
Yeah, but I guess my whole point is that they've got time. Like, they don't have to do everything in year one of their tenure. Like, you've got time to build this thing. Like, and you're trying to turn the roster over. You want it to be a younger team. Like, I understand that. Like, it seems like the Blue Jays were willing to pay a premium for a player like this, and I just don't feel like the Mets are at a stage where they absolutely got to do that. I don't think
they're trying to win a World Series in the next 3 to 5 years. I mean, that's,
yeah, I understand that, but you're still going to have opportunities to add players, not just this offseason, but throughout the course of the regular season, because there'll be opportunities for trades, and there'll be opportunities next offseason. So you don't have to do everything in year one.
Yeah, but you're not trading. The point is that we were all surprised that, I mean, Sandy Alderson said they would most likely spend money as opposed to making trades because their farm system has been gutted.
Yeah.
But Lindor is so good, and the fact that Cookie Carrasco was in the deal, that's a no-brainer.
Yeah, you had
to do
that.
That's an unbelievable deal.
Yeah, it's a great deal.
But when you look at
and you were able to get that deal because you know you're going to have to pay Lindor $300 million.
Okay, so fine. I mean, listen, Jacob DeGrom's contract is the best thing that Brody Van Wagenen did for the Mets.
No question.
So, I mean, you're paying Jake, you're going to pay Lindor. It looks like, I mean, you'll probably end up paying Conforto as well. But, I mean, looking forward, you're not going to make a trade during the regular season to get someone of George Springer's caliber.
And that's
no.
And
you don't have a lot of assets to get that. Correct.
And then next offseason, the crop of outfield, like, you want to talk about shortstops and everything else? It's awesome. Guess what? We already have a shortstop. The crop of outfielders is not great. And there's a huge drop-off offensively from Jackie Bradley Jr., from George Springer to Jackie Bradley Jr., or Kevin Pillar. Humongous.
Huge.
Drop-off.
Huge. You're right. Nobody's arguing that with you. I'm going to take the wait-and-see approach. I would have loved
Springer. With you on that one, Dave. I'm with you on that one.
Jeff Passan, SportsCenter. Why did the Mets miss out on this terrific center fielder?
You know, the Mets were there, but they weren't there like the Blue Jays. And ultimately, that's what happened here. George Springer got a massive contract, 6 years, $150 million, in an offseason where massive contracts simply aren't being given out. Remember, the biggest deal up to this point was $90 million for DJ LeMahieu. And I understand that JT Realmuto hasn't signed yet, Trevor Bauer hasn't signed yet. But the fact is, Springer was always going to get the most money on this market. It was just a matter of how high the teams were going to be willing to go. And the Blue Jays did not want to miss on another guy and paid a premium price for it.
So he goes to Toronto or Florida or wherever the case
like
may be.
It doesn't feel like 150 is that premium of a price.
It is in this
well, based on
market.
The market.
Yeah, but didn't we say, I mean, the whole point of being excited that Steve Cohen bought the team was he can take advantage of a soft market. Like he didn't deal with the losses that everyone dealt with. He just bought the team. He bought the team for $2.4 billion. He just made $1.6 billion in his other company in a year. I mean, cash-wise, I think he's good. And he said he was buying the team not to make money.
Hey, and I'll wait and see. He could have gone 6 for 150. He could have gone 6 for 175. He could go whatever he wants to go.
But maybe, listen, I think they want to say it's money. Maybe it is, you know, the 6 years that scared them off a little bit. I mean, he'll be 31 in September. I mean, Pete Alonso looks like he's locked in as your future. I mean, he'll play some first, but if they're going to have a DH, he's going to be your DH, right?
Looks like it, yep.
And if you sign Conforto, and at some point in, you know, 3 years, you know, George Springer just athletically isn't good enough to play center field now. I mean, center field anymore, and you're paying him that much money, you know, where do you move him? To a corner outfield spot when you already have Conforto signed? So that stuff makes sense to me, too. It's just, I mean, I don't know. Maybe I set my expectations too high, but we'll see what happens. But I mean, it's not over yet.
It's not over yet, and let's see what they do. If they add Bradley and Hand and Lindor and Carrasco and keep Stroman.
That's a hell of an offseason.
I think
that's
you feel
a hell of an offseason.
And I get it, Rick. I mean, we all have these delusions of maybe grandeur of like, oh my, we're gonna sign everybody, right? Bauer and Springer and Lindor, and we're gonna do everything. And maybe that was unrealistic. Maybe this is more realistic that they're gonna, you know.
Yeah, who do you guys think you are? The Yankees? Stop it.
I think the Yankees think they're the Mets, the Wilpons. Getting LeMahieu for 50.
No, we actually
that's
get
ridiculous.
To the postseason. We don't think we're that.
Oh, that's an insane deal.
We
I still can't
get
believe
to the postseason.
I still can't believe Cashman pulled that deal out of his. You know
that
what?
He got him for $15 million a year.
It's beautiful.
It's amazing to me.
He almost didn't get a raise.
Well, I think you know what it was. I think he wanted $90 million, but then you come to the realization like I want to play baseball as long as humanly possible, So if I can get that extra year to take down the average, at least I'll have somewhere to play that sixth year. You know what I mean? Like, who knows? By the time he's into his sixth year, like, say he signs a five-year deal.
Mm-hmm.
Right, is he gonna? Where's he going to play in year six? Like, he may not have a job in year six. He might have to retire.
He might not.
He does. Making $15 million a year.
Yeah.
That's pretty solid.
And he's going to be a Yankee for a long time. And you got a great deal at $15 million per. All right, time now for a little sports center. Outfielder George Springer and the Blue Jays, like we've just mentioned, agree on a six-year, $150 million deal. Mets president Sandy Alderson called the Jared Porter hiring a, quote, wake-up call, and that he will look for ways to ensure the team does a better job of vetting potential hires in the future. Hall of Famer Don Sutton passes away at the age of 75. A four-time All-Star, Sutton had a career record of 324 and 256 with an ERA of 3.26. Maybe the most impressive stat of all, never missed a turn in the rotation 756 consecutive starts. Devils beat the Rangers 4-3 at the Garden last night. Chiefs quarterback Patrick Mahomes cleared certain steps Monday. Quote, some big steps, sources told our Adam Schefter. Still must go through other steps to clear the concussion protocol in the coming days, and there is hope and optimism considering he is expected to practice later today, a source told our Adam Schefter. Tiger Woods had yet another microdiscectomy to alleviate nerve pain in his lower back. Will not compete in next week's Farmer Insurance Open or the Genesis Invitational next month. And Kyrie Irving, welcome back. He's rejoined the Nets, expected to play tonight against the Cavs after missing the team's last seven games. Irving said that, quote, he had a lot of family and personal stuff going on, so I just want to leave it at that. Tip off for that one at 7 o'clock. Kyrie Irving, and I don't know if you guys feel like this, he just bothers me. Like, he's a great player. He's an immense talent. Watching that press conference yesterday with lying down on the table, I thought was incredibly disrespectful, and we still know nothing of why he missed time. Rick, we know absolutely nothing of why this guy missed time other than it was a personal issue.
Personal issue, he needed to decompress.
Tell us something,
but you wouldn't. But Dave, even if he told you, you wouldn't understand. No, intellectually, he's operating at a higher level than you're operating at. You know what I mean? Like, spiritually, he's just at a different level. You're a pawn, and, you know, he's...
Well, he makes you feel like that, I'll tell you that.
He's at this whole different level. So now you got to try to make it work. I mean, this is... The unfortunate thing for Kyrie is he's missed seven games. They're 5-2. They're 2-0 with Harden. So now the pressure in every single NBA expert that you listen to, you know, I think we all love Tim Legler. So you got Legs, you got Stephen A. talking about how, like, even if Kyrie didn't come back, the way that this team flows with Harden and KD, they could very easily end up in the NBA Finals.
Yeah, but they're not winning the championship without Kyrie. Like, that's not happening. That's why he's such an important part of this. Like, they pushed all their chips to the middle of the table. They traded away all those assets, all of those players, the depth that they had on this team to try to bring over that third starter to compete for a championship. Because you know inevitably you're going to meet probably the Los Angeles Lakers out of the West. You cannot beat the Lakers with just James Harden and Kevin Durant. It ain't going to happen. So I think it's important to try to – I don't know, mend fences with the players that are still left in that locker room and try to make it all work with James Harden and KD. But I got to say, man, Kyrie doesn't make that easy to happen. He doesn't make it easy for that to happen.
He makes it difficult to root for also. Like, this is a team, and I'm a Knicks fan, and you're not supposed to, I guess, for some reason, root for the Nets. I don't mind the Nets at all. I have no issue with him. But I find it, and I like Durant a lot, I find it difficult to root for both Harden and Kyrie Irving.
Yeah, and then you get the big three. You got KD, Harden, and Kanye, and you got to try to make it work now.
Why Harden, though, Dave?
I didn't like the way he forced his way out of Houston. I didn't like it at all.
Well, wouldn't you say he's in a better basketball situation in Brooklyn than he was in Houston?
100%.
Okay, so, I mean, I don't have a problem with a player leveraging his abilities to be able to put themselves in a better professional circumstance.
Because they did everything they could to give him a chance to win, and then when it kind of fell apart and started going in the wrong direction, he dogged it on him and he demanded his way out.
Well, the franchise was transitioning, too. I mean, they got rid of the general manager, and that was somebody that he seemed like he was aligned with from a basketball philosophy standpoint. So I can understand, like, I get it. Like, he had carte blanche down in Houston the last 4 or 5 years. They traded for Chris Paul. That didn't work. They traded for Russell Westbrook. That didn't work. Like, they went to the small ball and got rid of Capella. That didn't work. Like, I understand all of the things that you're saying. They try to placate to James Harden.
Everything to try and
But it didn't work. And so now he's like, okay, I've tried everything that I can down at this situation, but I'm such a good basketball player. There are other teams that are going to want to bring me in. And it just so happens I had the opportunity to play with one of my friends in KD and try to do what we didn't do in Oklahoma City. I don't have a problem with that. Yeah, I don't think anybody should have a problem with that.
I would think part of Dave's problem is that the reason why it didn't work had something to do with James Harden. Like, Chris Paul didn't want to play with James Harden. Russell Westbrook didn't want to
be
play
there
with,
either
with James Harden. And of course, I mean, you're not going to, like, at some point, you're going to have to reboot the thing. Like, they had a window. I mean, Chris Paul pulls his hamstring, and then that was a wrap. So they missed their window to compete for a championship.
Yeah, that was the year. That was the year. If they were going to do it, that was going to be the year to do it. But what I don't understand is, if that's the case and they did miss their window, is James Harden just supposed to ride that out with the Rockets and
no,
waste the rest of his career?
No, but I don't think he handled himself well on the way out of that thing either.
You say what?
I don't think he handled himself well on the way out.
Well, he
I
mean, wanted out. And they said, we're not going to trade you when you want to be traded. We're going to do it on our timeline. Now, it just so happens that they ended up getting a haul in return for making that move. So it's James Harden, even in handling it poorly from an optics standpoint, he still did them a solid. But he put himself in a better situation. And now it's a matter of, can the three moving parts at Brooklyn, can the three stars make it work at a championship level? But I think everybody expects them to be there just because of the sheer talent that they do have.
Yeah, but you know, Chris, I mean, the way that Dave looks at things isn't as a, you know, as a player trying to put himself in a better situation. It's a fan's perspective.
Fair.
Like, I mean, the Houston Rockets fans still have to be Houston Rockets fans.
Sure.
They can't get out of a bad situation. And the fact that James Harden didn't even try, I see both sides of
it. Is the NBA even like that anymore, though? Like, is the NBA fan like a fan of the team, or are they a fan of the player?
Both.
Because I feel like in this era of player empowerment, it's like we're following our players. Like, I was like, are you a Cleveland Cavs fan? No, I'm a LeBron James fan. And when he went to the Miami Heat, I cheered for them. And now when he's with the Lakers, they cheer for them. I feel like gone are the days of the NBA fans of yesteryear, where you're talking about me being a Lakers fan because I grew up in Showtime in the 80s, or Dave being a Knicks fan, or you being a Knicks fan, Rick. I feel like we're past that now. And LeBron
started that
in the 2010s.
That's dwindling, but I still feel like that's the case. Like, I'm a Knicks fan. And I, you know, the Knicks stink, so I'll find another team to root for during the course of the season or in the postseason,
Dave,
right? Just to kind of adopt a club. But I'm a Knicks fan, right? And the Knicks playing the Magic the other day, it was one of the worst games I've ever seen in my life. But I watched it, and I was excited that the Knicks won that basketball game. I'm a Knicks fan. Chris, you're a Lakers fan.
Yeah, I'm a Lakers fan. And I rode with them in the latter years of the late Kobe Bryant when it was really bad, when we were drafting guys like Brandon Ingram and Lonzo Ball. Like, I was a fan during that time. And that was a tough time. But I also remember the five championships that Kobe was able to deliver to the franchise, and that's what I lived off of.
But Chris, now all of a sudden, so let's take us back now. So you just said it. So they had that run with Shaq, and then it was bad until they bring in Powell, right?
Yeah.
So what if Kobe said, once Shaq left, you know what, screw it, I'm out. I want out. And he showed up fat, didn't even show up.
You say showed up fat, didn't show up?
Well, didn't show up initially, then just got right. I mean, just showed up fat, didn't even give it a chance. It was like, you know what? You guys rebuild without me. I'm all set.
Listen, because I was a professional athlete, I would understand it. Not wasting any moments in my career. I get that. But I guess when I looked at the situation in Houston, I mean, listen, it's not just Houston Rockets fans that feel a way about James Harden leaving that situation. Dave just said it. Like, he didn't like the way that he handled it. And I just don't know if you're a player that wants out of the situation and the organization is saying that we're not going to do it, and if we do consider it, it's going to be on our timeline. How would you react? Think about if you were in that situation.
Well, put myself in that situation as a player is different than how I would look at it as a fan. I get it.
Sure. I think you guys look at it differently than, almost everyone listening to the show.
Maybe I'm just wired different, though. I mean, I played on some of the worst teams you've ever seen in your entire life, and I was willing to sign a 15-year deal to stick it out because I feel like it meant that much for me to stay with one team.
I think
team.
You're different. Okay, I think you're more like the fan.
But that's how fans think. Like,
I know.
Like, fans are loyal. Like, I want my players to be as loyal as I am.
And I think we've seen that that's just not going to be like that.
Thanks for listening to the DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg podcast.
I have nothing left.
Hear more of DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg live weekday mornings from 5 to 8 a.m. on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
Hey, Alexa, play ESPN New York 98.7.